Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Confusion rules the day, with no clear details about the possible deployment of troops and a surge of immigration agents in Chicago.
He wants to have troops on the ground to stop people from voting, to intimidate people from going to the voting booth.
Governor J.B. Pritzker says sending the military to Chicago isn't about crime. It's about the midterms.
Whether or not somebody can afford to post bond is not determinative of whether they are a risk to public safety.
The Trump administration takes aim at cashless bail policies as a judge blocks a move to pull federal funding from Chicago over its sanctuary policy.
What we see with this budget represents what's best for our students.
The Chicago School Board says no to Mayor Brandon Johnson's push to borrow. Plus, Johnson's administration says the city faces a $1.1 billion budget hole next year. The FDA moves to limit access to COVID vaccines. And the Chicago Reader staves off a shutdown thanks to a new owner.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Rufus Williams of WVON, our own Heather Sharone, WBEZ's Araceli Gomez-Aldana, and Michael Liptrot from Block Club Chicago. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. Plenty on our plate to tackle. Heather, Chicago police say they're preparing for the possible deployment of National Guard troops here in Chicago, but how much can they prepare for when federal leaders aren't coordinating with the city?
They are flying blind indeed. And it's not clear exactly what the president is going to do. It's not clear when he's going to do it, and it's not clear what authority he's going to assert. However, most people at City Hall now believe that the president is going to do what he did in Los Angeles and order a surge of immigration agents to Chicago to conduct immigration raids, and then wait to see what the city's reaction to that is. And if protests erupt and if protests turn violent, that would give him the authority, he believes, to order the National Guard to Chicago. So that is what we are all bracing for. It's unclear when that sort of sequence of events will play out, or even if that will be the sequence of events.
Yeah, I mean, how about that, Araceli? You know, we're waiting on this potential immigration crackdown, reportedly 200 additional agents looking to be housed at Great Lakes Naval Station. Sounds like they're setting up for sort of a military scale operation there.
Right, and I think it just creates so much confusion with people living in Chicago and the surrounding areas. We had all this talk about the National Guard. What can they legally do here? They can't make any arrests without, you know, helping a law enforcement agency. But now we're talking about DHS, we're talking about ICE, and those are two completely different things. And I think us as reporters, we're trying to figure out what we need to cover and how we can help residents, because they're confused. What are they going to do if they see armed National Guard members in the city?
Well, you know, and how about that question of legal authority, Rufus? I mean, troops not supposed to engage in law enforcement without an emergency or express permission. There's been some discussion that maybe on paper they'll be here to protect federal property, for example, but do you expect the administration to operate within those confines?
No, I don't. There was some of the discussion about what took place in Washington, D.C., where there was an opportunity for the president to declare what an emergency was. As they move to these other cities, there are restrictions on what it is they actually can do, and protecting federal buildings, protecting federal property is what they can do. Otherwise, what would they do while they're here? This becomes one of these things. You know, Chicago is the place of J.B. Pritzker, who is the real billionaire, who's thinking about, who's perhaps running for president. It is the home of Barack Obama. It is the place of Rahm Emanuel. There are a number of reasons why he is being vindictive and would look at Chicago and doing something. And if for no other reason, we're talking about it. And it's a lot of what he likes to do, is to have us really pay attention to whatever it is he's doing so he controls those headlines in the face of all else that's going on.
You're entirely right. And it is something, when we think about it, there's nothing more performative or egocentric than to send the military essentially to political rivals or because the state didn't vote for you. And when thinking about the impact this is going to have on a community level, the trauma it may inflict to have military on the streets, the National Guard, ICE, all coming essentially just because, like you said, a vindictive nature. And for Pritzker and Obama to be here, people Trump has targeted, it's just going to become such political theater on this level of a stage that the public would be just pawns in that way.
Well, and we heard a bit from Governor Pritzker earlier, you know, saying he sees this more about the elections. I mean, what else have we heard from local leaders this week?
It is something where when local leaders when thinking about that in terms of just the response and how everyone's just bracing for the worst. And when thinking about not only leaders, community members, we had Kwame Raoul here, and the question of how is this going to be done should Trump deploy the National Guard, and the question of what law will be invoked, because just this shroud of secrecy surrounding how it's going to be deployed is going to take so much longer for the state to mount a response and figure out legally how to challenge it or issue or have an injunction issue to block it.
Yeah, and as Heather said at the top, they haven't communicated with anyone.
Right.
So the conversation has really been more, we don't know what they're going to do, so we don't know how to respond to it, because the communication that should happen has not happened at all.
Yeah. I do think that local advocates and just organizations are preparing, especially when we're talking about immigration and, you know, if there's going to be ICE on the streets. I think that there is a lot of conversations happening locally about how can, you know, communities, especially when I'm thinking about Latino majority communities and neighborhoods, and there's a lot of conversation there as well. And I do think it gets confusing when it's National Guard, when it's ICE, when it's DHS, and people really don't understand.
Well, and of course, you know, there's some 2,000 troops in D.C. right now, you know, over 60-odd square miles, 200 agents over Chicago, you know, Chicago's 230 square miles, not quite the same infusion, but you have to imagine they're going to be concentrated in certain areas, so it might feel like that influx of troops.
Right, and I'm just, we're kind of looking closely to see what people are seeing, and I'm just waiting to see. I mean, like we've mentioned, not a lot of answers this week. Superintendent Snelling just didn't have a lot of answers during press conference earlier because they just don't know.
And Heather, a lot of this, I mean, as much as they may want to prepare a legal challenge, some of it, by its very nature, I think will have to sort of be reactive.
Correct. So we don't know whether the president is going to nationalize the Illinois National Guard or whether he will send National Guard troops from other red states who have sort of volunteered those troops into Illinois. I think that the legal challenge with Governor Pritzker and Attorney General Raoul has said will come, will hinge in large part about whether or not those troops belong, are you know, sort of native to Illinois or are coming from other states. It's hard to overstate how unprecedented it would be for the president to send National Guard troops from one state into another state. Also, you know, it's going to be a huge challenge for the Chicago Police Department, which is prohibited by state and city law from assisting federal agents in conducting enforcement operations. However, where they draw that line between assisting and sort of stepping back and maintaining the police can be sometimes a blurry line. If the deployments do happen, Chicago Police, Superintendent Snelling said, will be in uniform, so they're easily distinguishable from federal troops or ICE agents. And he says that he will no longer deploy officers to calls for help if they suspect it's an immigration enforcement operation. Instead, a supervisor will go report back. And if it is a federal operation, no officers will be deployed. That's a change since July after a big outcry over how CPD handled a previous incident.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if it's troops from within Illinois or certainly troops from outside, they may or may not be familiar with Chicago streets and neighborhoods, so another wrinkle there.
Yeah, one thing we can be sure of is that it is going to be very disruptive. It's going to be disruptive to schools, it's going to be disruptive to business, it's going to be disruptive to everything that happens within our city, which may actually be the point.
And then thinking about, from a community standpoint, regardless of if it's Illinois National Guard, other National Guard, CPD, the community's relationship with law enforcement, and especially when we think about black and brown communities where for so many years that relationship has been tense.
Sure.
And this week I've been speaking to residents as well as nonviolence advocates, and something that's clear is a lot of the progress that CPD has made, particularly on the south and west sides, to mend those relationships, that if National Guard were to occupy that area, regardless of CPD's active contribution or not, it's still gonna hurt. And when we think about things, just trauma in that way, and the trainings, and how many consent decrees that CPD has been under to help improve their practices, National Guard has no understanding of that. And we don't know how involved they're gonna be, that might wipe years, decades of work off the books.
Well, Michael, sticking with you for a moment, jumping to another big story this week, of which there were many. Chicago school board, after much debate, approved a budget. No major loan in there, no pension payment unless there's unexpected revenue. Were you surprised to see the interim CEO chosen by the mayor and several board members he's aligned with go against his wishes?
From a big picture, yes, it is a bit surprising, but thinking pragmatically about just how the state of the budget is and how much gridlock has been involved, it is something that the way it resolved wasn't too surprising. And one thing I think is big to look at is the $175 million pension payment, as well as the use of TIF funds and, in a way, the reliance on TIF surplus when it comes to the budget, which is wishful thinking, but still it is risky to bank millions of dollars on a surplus, especially with so many different factors that can influence not only the general economy, but whether or not we see that come back in tax increment financing.
Yeah, everybody wants a piece of TIF money. Rufus, if, say, your interim CEO, Macklin King, who hasn't said yet whether she wants the job full-time, do you think this could sour her relationship with the mayor somewhat?
Well, who would want the job right now? I mean, this is a really tough position to be in.
You could say that about the mayor's job,
at least, too. It's true, but here you've got at least 21 bosses.
Sure.
And you've got this big hole that you're trying to fill coming in. I think when she came in, the expectation in my first conversation with her was about the fact that they would take on this pension payment. So the movement has happened within that process. I think once you get in and you look at what you're trying to do, and if the answer is we're trying to do what's best for children, this outside pension payment doesn't fit into that equation. Mm-hmm. So where they are now, you know, there's a lot that's talked about revenues, TIF funding, borrowing, all these other things. We still have a lot of other parts of this system that need to be right-sized. They need to be corrected. We do need to go back and look at schools that are under-enrolled significantly and see what the impact of that is. There has just been recently this conclusion of the negotiations with the teachers, the conclusion of negotiations with the principals, the payment of a lot of money that CPS simply doesn't have. And how you get through those things. These are the structural issues that they've still got to deal with when they get through whatever they've done in this budget they approved yesterday.
Yeah. Well, from the district's budget woes to the city's, Heather, the Johnson administration is out today with the budget forecast, and it is predicting a pretty eye-popping gap for next year. What are the details there?
Well, the city is approximately $1.15 billion, with a B, dollars in the hole. And that is the largest deficit since the height of the pandemic, when the economic catastrophe triggered by the stay-at-home orders sort of blew a giant hole in the city's budget. It gives you a sense of just the scale of the problem. It is about 14% bigger than last year's budget deficit, which was pretty big all on its own, and there are no easy answers left for the mayor to sort of close this gap. And to be fair to him, this is not a disaster of his making.
Sure.
The city's budget has long been out of whack with skyrocketing pension payments, increasing personnel costs, and just a massive amount of debt that you've got to make those interest payments on. So this is the first step of sort of a multi-month process. In mid-October, the mayor is going to outline a plan to sort of fill that gap. He has said that it will not include a property tax hike, but that is the best, easiest, and most efficient way for the city to raise revenue, and everybody will be waiting to see what he proposes to do instead.
That was surprising.
Yeah.
That was really surprising to me, to see him play that card this early of ruling out a property tax hike. And it's something where I get it from a campaign perspective, that was a promise. But seeing just the state of the budget and then him introducing it last year and ultimately that being passed on initially from, $300 million down to $150 to nothing. And now, before we even get fully into the process, the proposals to just rule it completely out, I don't know, that may come back to bite him. It's definitely a question of, is it at a point, are we at a point where he should renege on that promise?
Well, I think he's saying to the city council, you didn't want to do that this last year. We're in a deeper hole this year, so you tell me what you want to do. It's sort of like, I tried this, you said no.
What's your plan,
what's
tough
your
guy?
What's your plan? Exactly.
Well, and of course, you know, economic projections, they always rely on, you know, there not being a major downturn. And if there's a lot of uncertainty about, you know, trade and tariffs, which the federal judge knocking down tariffs, which could come back. I mean, could things get even tougher for budgeteers if there's a recession or just any sort of a downturn?
Absolutely. The president has made no bones about the fact that he wants to yank nearly $3 billion in federal funding from Chicago. If that happens, the city's budget crisis goes from very bad to really unspeakably bad.
Yeah.
Now, a federal judge has tossed that lawsuit, so that is not does not appear to be happening anytime soon. But there are other things that the Trump administration can do to make Chicago's sort of budget significantly worse.
This is a really tough time for the city. Mm-hmm. And when you think about not raising property taxes, because that was a promise in the campaign, however, last year, the idea was to raise them. That's gone. Yeah. I mean, that one's just, that horse is out of the barn. When you're trying now to figure it out and talking about progressive taxes and more taxes on the ultra wealthy, more taxes on corporations, and we've got to keep them in the city somehow.
Right.
We've got to keep them attached to here. It's a very tough position to be in. And I know that there's been the accumulation of a number of very smart people to try to help the city figure this out. Very much looking forward to seeing what it is that they come up with.
Well, and speaking of that issue of federal funding, I mean, Araceli, a federal judge blocked the Trump administration from clawing that back over the city's policies for immigrant protections.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
And really, I think that my biggest takeaway from all of it was just the judge ruling that would just be unconstitutional. And really, I was waiting to see what the reaction was going to be. Sometimes it's a good, you know, bad reaction that we get later on. But really interesting to see that, and like Cheryl or Heather is mentioning, is there's just that money is needed, and that money has specific purposes, and so it was interesting.
Right, when it's already earmarked in the budget, when folks are already planning on this, there's not necessarily always a plan B for it.
That's right, and so we're waiting to see. We're waiting to see all that.
That seems to be a thing from this federal government. Everything's about money, whether it's tariffs or whether it's fees or whether it's clawing back. Everything is about money, and so that seems to be the wedge that's being used for whatever that is. And somehow, while it was determined some time ago that Congress was the ones who should be making those determinations, somewhere along the way, Congress has got to stand up and do their jobs.
Yeah, though a very different Congress than the one we had in the first Trump term. Another move, the president signed an executive order aimed at ending cashless bail policies like Illinois has, which he cannot do with just the stroke of a pen. But Michael, what's the rationale behind that order?
There is a rationale behind it, and when it comes down to it, ultimately, a lot of a similar vindictive nature, similar to the National Guard, of the idea that a cash bail system is helping enforce justice, that mm-hmm. cash bail is helping to keep the streets safe, but ultimately, the bail system boils down to a economic obstacle for people that simply just can't afford however much 10% to get out. And from D.C. to Illinois, the Safety Act has been so instrumental in providing equity and true justice for people that regardless of how much money you have, that if you are deemed to not be a threat to the public, to be released until your court date. And so now with Trump, similar to the other funding that he's trying to yank, threatening that over cashless bail being instituted, it's making things, as Rufus said, more about money and taking out the humanity of people having their freedom.
And these things become, I mean, it's a cashless bail situation. It's also playing out in voting rights, where you're requiring certain identifications that people may not be able to afford to get mm-hmm. or be able to afford to have in these different situations. So it's money on that side, but it's also those who have the least who will be most impacted by what these things are that are doing, because it's not about what is good or fair. And to your point, it's really this bail system, as it was taken away, was not about whether it was about whether or not not guilt, not anything else. And those who had a lot of money, like the current occupant, was able to get around a lot of things because he has money. But a lot of people who don't will be.
And it's that lack of empathy in that way, because as you said, the current occupant of the White House has a recent mugshot. And so it's something where you would think that there would be relatability about the bond and the bail system. But no. And as you said, it's coming down to who has money, who doesn't. Who the haves and the have-nots.
Well, another federal move this week, Araceli, the FDA signed off on some updated COVID vaccines, but revoked approval for one variety for children under five, says younger adults and children need an underlying health condition. This has already been getting a lot of, even before this week, big pushback from medical professionals.
Right, just in time for flu season coming up now, and school and children being back in school. So the restrictions, I think a lot of health experts and medical providers are kind of looking at it and not scratching their head and saying, why would we need all of these restrictions to get a vaccine that is proven and science has proven that it is effective? So one thing that we are kind of talking to doctors about is, what is a healthy young person going to do if they cannot get access to a COVID-19 vaccine? And I think a lot about not that long ago when we were in a global pandemic, and it wasn't just about your safety, but it was the safety of the people that you were around. So you might be healthy and think that you would be okay, but maybe you are around people that are immunocompromised or elderly or young children, and really it comes down to how are young and healthy, quote unquote, none of these restrictions, how are they going to get the vaccine, where are they going to be able to go, and are they going to have to pay out of pocket, because things are not cheap right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks are anxious about that possibility. Heather, we found out city records show that the Chicago has settled with the family of a teenager pinned down by an off-duty Chicago officer. Remind us about that incident.
Well, this happened sort of in the midst of debates about how policing should happen and how police use force against members of the public. This teen was suspected by this off-duty Chicago police sergeant of stealing his son's bike. He tackled him, pinned him to the ground, and was actually charged with assault. He was acquitted, and then the family sued the city, and the city settled for $100,000. Now, what's interesting about that amount is that had it been just $1 more, it would have had to go to the full city council for approval. Also, Sergeant Michael Vitolarello, he is no longer with the Chicago Police Department after the Civilian Office of Police Accountability recommended he be terminated for his actions. But he is now pulling his pension of a cool $76,000 annually.
And that's taxpayer money.
That is taxpayer money all the way around for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, some positive stories this week, too. Heather, Chicago Reader will continue publishing after its acquisition by a Seattle-based media company with a pretty interesting business model. Tell us about that.
That's right. So this is a company out of Seattle that really wants to sort of reinvigorate the whole notion of alternative weeklies. The Chicago Reader was one of the greatest ones, and this is sort of a lifeline for the Reader that's been through a series of ownership changes over a number of years.
I think this is kind of a cool thing to see. You like to see papers being acquired, not by just a hedge fund, but by someone who has an actual interest in them.
Yeah, and I think the company has long-standing kind of history with these types of publications. I was excited to see that the Reader is very committed to still
printing
that physical paper. And really, in past talks that I've had with the Reader, it is a very important source of information, especially when you're talking about the unhoused community, and that is a lot of the times how a lot of people get their information. Yeah. So it was good news.
Yes, absolutely.
Dedication, like you said, it can't be unnoticed. I was a part of the Reader's Racial Justice Writers Room 2 years ago, and it was really helpful, just that mentorship that they offer, and especially just in this age of journalism. I know we've all been at shops or shops past that have been hit recently by just the state of the economy. So it is definitely a silver lining.
Well, the silver lining for my Friday was having the four of you here, but unfortunately, we are out of time. So our thanks to Rufus Williams, Heather Sharon, Araceli Gomez-Aldana, and Michael Liptrot. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. That's at WTTW.com/newsletter. And we're off for the holiday on Monday, but we'll see you back here on Tuesday for Chicago Tonight. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. Okay, well, you know who's having a great weekend? The choir from Chicago's Leo Catholic High School. Going to the semifinals on September 16th of America's Got Talent. I hope you all watched.
It is so exciting to see this happening with this group of young black men down on the south side of Chicago.
A choir, a good old-fashioned choir.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. And they blend secular and gospel music. Yes. Like they did a cover of Believer by Imagine Dragons.
They did.
It's really good.
Yeah. And it was incredible to see the way they take up the stage, the choreography that they have. The interplay among them. I mean, these guys are, they could be going somewhere.
$1 million is on the mind.
Right. This is good for a small school down on the south side of Chicago.
That had been on the verge of closure, I don't even know how many times.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully for those boys, I can give them a chance for if they want to go to college for a choir. Yes. Potential scholarships.
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of exposure, you cannot buy that. Yeah.
And it's good PR for Chicago at a time where we are in the president's crosshairs every day.
That's it. They are such they represent so well so many things that are so important. It's just good to see them. Good to see them from Chicago while we're being looked at for all these other things. Yeah.
Everything dope.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm working to preserve the dignity and rights of all individuals.